Welcome to the Water Cooler Podcast. My name is Brandon.
My name is Jeremy.
I'm Caleb.
And I'm Harley.
And sometimes Rob. I don't know.
Maybe. What are we talking about today?
Dude, alternative investments. There's some crazy ones out there.
What?
There's what? Sneakers.
How? Okay, hold on.
Alternative investment, I'm assuming that means an investment that's different than like the stock market.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's like outside of like the conventional like securities that people
buy. In my
so is that like buying a part, quote, yeah, air quotes, part of the Mona Lisa?
Yeah.
Or so is that like buying a Michael Jordan trading card? Or so is it a portion of buying into a portion of a Michael Jordan trading card?
What are you referring to?
Alternative investments.
So
it's alternative investments, just a category of investments.
So you just give, instead of like, you know, going to H&R Block, well, they don't do trading. Do they do trading?
Yeah.
Okay, H&R Block, and you're like, here's $1,000 a month. Don't put it in the stock market, put it somewhere else. They take that money and allocate it towards these markets.
So I think you can pick and choose what you want to invest in. Like, I want to own a piece of that, of the pair of shoes Michael Jordan wore in his first like NBA finals. I don't want to compare it to a mutual fund because that's kind of like multiple. Well, I guess you could buy a sneaker fund, but I would view it as like, I think on Robinhood, you can buy a fraction of a share of a company.
Yeah.
Yep. View that sneaker as a company. And you're like, I can't afford to buy the whole shoe, but I know that shoe's going to go up in value, so I'm going to buy a fraction of it.
So it'd be like my mind keeps circulating back to like sports auctions or like sports memorabilia auctions, like the quote unquote last foot or touchdown that Tom Brady ever threw that is now mislabeled and no longer a thing. But you know, some person bought that.
Yep.
And that person could have been representative of an investment company, of a conglomerate of people to purchase that in parts.
Yep. Well, he would buy it for his company and then
they would invest in that as a market. So that football is now a market, so its price is going to go up and down over time or whatever.
Yeah. To me,
the fuck? That's nuts, man.
These are all theoretical markets, right? They're not.
No, they're real.
They're tangible.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I mean, no market's tangible. That's crazy.
Unless if goods are exchanged.
Unless goods are exchanged.
So, like, the easiest thing is, like, it's an alternative asset. When you buy a stock, would it be called a traditional asset?
I think so.
Ultimately, the reason alternative is thrown in front of it is because people first jump to stocks, bonds, as your normal. Where in... It's just like everything with, like, I guess, a supply and demand. Like, you're buying, ultimately, you could buy the whole shoe if you had the money, but someone would probably recommend you just to go actually buy the shoe yourself.
That's crazy.
Correct, Jeremy. It's traditional.
So, that's where I'm like.
Is the other category.
Sorry, I'm just trying to wrap my brain all of. Like, I understand the premise, but, like, to me, it was always just some billionaire bought that shoe or, you know, whatever. Some dude with a lot of money purchased that entire shoe. And now it's not a piece of a conglomerate of an investment firm or whatever. It's just just exists.
Sometimes that does happen too.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. And that's I never thought it happened outside of that scenario where it was just, you know, Fanatic bought X item and there's no market for it. It just, he now owns it or is either going to sell it in X amount of time.
Sports memorabilia to me, I don't like, I get it, but I don't like, if I bought Tom Brady's last touchdown ball, like I would just feel weird having people like, hey, come look at this football that I wasn't at the game. Like if I met Tom Brady and had him sign a football, to me, that's different, but it's just like,
I mean,
feel weird.
The only thing that would assign value differently is that you have a personal connection to that football. So if somebody came up to you and was like, oh, this is a Tom Brady signed football, a football off NFL.com's worth $55 or whatever.
Yeah.
I'll buy it from you for $60. And you're like, well, no, that signature is worth more than $5 to me. So then that is where the market comes in. So somebody could be related to Tom Brady, loves Tom Brady, is stalking Tom Brady, and that is where that value over, you know, stock item comes into
exactly.
play.
Exactly. Everything's subjective in investing. Everything. So, like, if I were at Tom Brady's last football game and I wanted, like, I saw that last touchdown and I want that ball because I was at that game, I might pay more. Or if I wasn't at that game, I might pay less. Or if I wasn't at the game but I just love Tom Brady, maybe I'll outbid everyone.
And,
but, I don't know.
And if you, the only thing that gives that thing value is pretty much time. Like, how much time is either that item's either going to be so great up until the day where he gets into the Hall of Fame and then somebody's like, oh, people remember who Tom Brady is again, I'm going to sell it. Or it's next price jump, I'm guessing. I don't know the statistics behind this. Or the day that that person dies and then it goes up in value again. Because then you'll never have another touchdown ball or whatever.
Well, I can now kind of see why you could break alternative and a traditional, like, when you buy a stock in a company, there's like the financials behind it that you can like base your logic off. But really at the end of the day, it's whether someone values that company higher or lower, same as like a shoe. The only difference between a shoe and a company is the company makes like revenue. The shoe, I just have to hope more people want it and there's less out there. So it's more of a risky asset
because yes, exactly.
It can't create revenue for you. Ultimately.
Get to work.
Like cryptocurrencies.
No, yeah, exactly.
I can't go down that road again.
You know, every time I get in this room and I talk to you guys, I feel like I know a little bit more about finance world and investments until we actually start talking about it, then I realize I just really don't have any idea.
Until the C word comes out, crypto.
Crypto. And then I'm like, oh yeah, there's, I don't know.
Talk about tangible or not tangible.
I just watched a documentary, maybe it was on Netflix, but it's about this, he was like, he had a crypto firm, and he just died.
Farm or firm?
Firm. And people think he faked his death.
Oh yeah, I saw that too. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Super crazy. And I guess this kid has been gotten in trouble since he's been 15 for making Ponzi schemes.
Yeah.
Isn't crypto a Ponzi scheme?
Good.
Some of them definitely are. Some of them have been caught. The SEC released some information on what to look for when you're investing in crypto a couple of years ago. So I'd highly recommend going to the SEC website before investing into crypto.
Biggest issue I have with crypto is around like the password aspect of it, where if you fail your login so many times, it's just permanently locked.
Well, that's dependent on like the type of encryption that you choose to secure it with. Yeah. So like there are some that are extremely secure like that. Some are just, if you don't get the password right, then you can't get it.
That's to me, that's just,
it's the risk you take for dealing with fake money.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you could just lose billions in NFTs. Who knows? That don't actually have any value anyway.
I mean, isn't all money fake?
When are we going to drop the cooler coin?
So it's dropped. There's only 4 or 5 available. If you want us to produce another one, you have to buy in.
They're valued at $100 billion each. So
totally,
I'm
not
selling
a Ponzi
mine
scheme
right now.
I do not get how this is a thing, but on some of the podcasts I listen to, the ad, it's this person talking about how they're releasing a podcast of NFTs. And it's the character that's the NFT is making the podcast. I'm just like, this is where I'm just like, I'm done. Like,
is that the metaverse?
I don't know.
Have you guys heard of burn rates in crypto?
No.
Well, like, you can, like, someone can create a cryptocurrency and then promote it. And then start off with so much supply that whoever buys in, if they just hold and the creator decides to burn like half the tokens, then your value that you hold goes up drastically.
So if you, in this scenario, buy 50.1% and then the owner burns or gets rid of their extra 50%. You are now the owner of that.
That's also how some of these stable tokens, stable coins, that was part of the way that they stabilize their exchange rate versus, like, let's say the US dollar, is they would create or burn specific ratios of what is it, like, I'll just say supply. And that's how they would sometimes, like, become pegged to, like, let's say the US dollar. But after a while, like, big players in the institutional market were testing how stable they really were and were, like, buying and selling huge portions of the stable coins and were causing it to fluctuate. Then after a while, like, they started to crash, like, three, four weeks ago. Like, the ones that were pegged to specific currencies, all these stable coins, like, just crashed in value.
I saw that. I saw everything crash, but I...
Is that related to all the apes that are just tanking in value? The Bored Apes?
I don't know.
I think a lot of those tanked in value because they got stolen through their encryption.
What's that?
NFTs.
NFTs.
Like the monkeys.
The Bored Ape. Bored Ape. Yeah.
I think you'd recognize it if you saw them.
Well, I know you've told me something about there's certain platforms where you're actually not buying the actual coin.
Yeah, like PayPal is one of those. I think it's either Square. No.
I thought it was Coinbase.
Square or Coinbase.
I'm pretty sure it's Coinbase.
Coinbase. Yes, it is Coinbase. So I think Square, which is now Block, I think is creating their own form of, like, a hard wallet, and I don't know all the details, but my guess would be that it would be, like, a legitimate wallet instead of the company holding it for you. And if the company goes bankrupt, then all of your crypto is technically an asset of theirs, and they can liquidate it to fulfill debt holder obligations before your own.
Sorry,
super sketchy.
I'm trying to process all of this.
Oh,
my knowledge of crypto is, like, I don't know, if there's 100 levels, mine's like level 5, and then Caleb's is somewhere in the 50s to 90s. I don't know.
And then
most people's are at 5 or less. Like, you just get there and you just that's enough.
I know nothing compared to most, like, or a lot of people.
We'll call it a logarithmic scale.
I've never even invested in crypto.
But, you know, tons about it.
That's interesting you say you haven't invested in crypto. Do any of you guys own any? Have you ever owned any crypto?
Yes.
Dogecoins.
Yes. That is one of three I've only put my actual money towards. On Coinbase, for the longest time, they've had, like, oh, watch this video and take a quiz and you get free whatever of this coin, which I've done that. But all of those have pretty much tanked in value, but because it's probably because they're giving it away for free. But there were two on Coinbase that you can gain interest on, which I didn't fully understand, but I just put $10 towards it.
It's not a Ponzi scheme?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't like.
Those are covered on that SEC doc.
Dogecoin is the one where I guess I'm still sticking with my initial thought going into it is I'm watching this go to the moon or I'm losing the $10 I put in.
I have a question.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be real honest. I was trying to think of this while you're talking, so I don't know how to transition besides saying that. And Harley would appreciate this if he was here today. If you played RuneScape a lot, like, you know how in RuneScape you do work and you generate coins or gold. And mm-hmm. then you can put physical money towards buying more gold. And then you know, the more you play, the more gold you get, and you can just accumulate it. Is that cryptocurrency?
I think by definition, it would depend. It could be.
Like, that was always, when I heard of cryptocurrency, that was always
Or is it like just a digital currency?
If you spend money to get extra donuts in Candy Crush, is that
Is that crypto?
Crypto.
I think that's just, I think that would that's just be considered in spending. The cryptocurrency like world, that would probably just be considered like a traditional digital
but
currency. But I mean, crypto is also technically digital.
I don't think you can
it's just not encrypted
resell
yeah.
said donuts.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not encrypted.
Yeah. Oh, you can't. And it, okay. So we're just we're what if you could? Candy Crush could come out with a donut coin and they could just totally
yeah.
They could redefine the game.
I've been back on Candy Crush the last few weeks. That's why I brought it up.
You you know, you've been on a trip recently when you download Candy Crush. That's always my go-to.
I guess I've never played Candy Crush, but couldn't you technically sell someone your login to get?
I don't know. It might be tied to your phone number.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it's tied to your game center.
Because that's a way you Android. Could technically sell it. Is be like, I'm selling you my
account.
My yeah. Huh.
In Twitch, when you can gift subscriptions to streamers, right? Can they use that subscription to gift to someone else?
I have no idea.
Harley would know.
Subscriptors are a currency.
We need Harley.
Harley died. Again.
Not non-COVID related this time, though.
Well, I own some crypto. I just looked. I owned 1,200 Doge.
Oh.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Bitcoin.
And I owned, oh, I wish. I owned 0.004% of a Bitcoin. So just like $100 of a Bitcoin and maybe $200 of a Doge.
Yeah.
How long have you invested in, I guess, both of those respectively?
Year and a half ago is when I bought them. Maybe 2 years ago. In the pandemic, I was really bored. So I started with Robinhood, which is a joke of a company now. But yeah, it was fun then. Now I don't check it ever, which is probably good. That's what you're supposed to do with your investments. But no, it was a bad investment buying Dogecoin and Bitcoin. What?
I mean, I wonder, like, if you did go on Robinhood, you know, in 2020 when you're super bored and you just said, hey, I have $50 laying around. I'm just going to put a dollar towards, I don't know, 50 different investments and get, you know, your X amount of Dogecoin or Ethereum is another one, I think. I don't know.
There's Ethereum. Too many.
If you, so like towards like one of the big Ethereum, ones, Ethereum, and you get, you know, your 1,000 or whatever coins out of that $1. And it's like Bitcoin, like, you know, when it was 10, 15 years ago and it peaks at, I don't think any other crypto is probably going to get up to 30 grand, but I don't know anything about it. And you check it in 10 years and you're like, oh shit, I just made 30 grand out of, or more if it's depending on the value.
I used to work at a company and the guy that I would work with came from an Ivy League school. He's big into tech. So he was like big into like crypto. He's a big crypto believer. He thought that Ethereum was the best because of how many different like blockchains are kind of branching off like the Ethereum chain and like creating like different products, contract products, services, and other NFTs are being built off the Ethereum blockchain. And Ethereum's different than Bitcoin because I think it's kind of more of a, I think Bitcoin is sort of too, but Ethereum's a little bit better in a way where it's more like malleable. Like the blockchain's a little bit more malleable, and there's like a, which I think allows for more flexibility with work on the R&D front as time goes on. So in the long term, kind of Ethereum could kind of evolve with the needs and wants in the market, not only from a cryptocurrency aspect, but from a blockchain technology point of view as well. That's kind of where Bitcoin falls, is it was kind of created on this static blockchain technology that I don't know can evolve or is designed to evolve like Ethereum is.
I have no idea what was just said.
Okay.
I lost. Like, that's like, I think that is why I'm not fully bought it, because it's just so confusing.
Yeah. And look, like when the internet started, like how many of these players came in and were like, yeah, we're going to start a website. Like, all of a sudden, all these, like, just millions of websites were just going out, and like public companies were just coming out just because. like branding themselves as like part of the internet revolution and ended up going bankrupt. Like that could just be like what's going on in the crypto space.
So this, I sent Caleb this. There's a brewery in Savage that is going to be opening the 4th of July, I believe. On their website, it said, like, invest in us. So I thought, oh, you can, like, buy a percent. But from my understanding, they're really just taking a loan from me.
Yes.
Yep. So do I technically own part of them?
No.
Yeah. So I thought for like a couple hours, I was a part owner of a brewery.
Unless.
So it's just a donation?
Unless if they grant you stake in the company for, like, you can ask for a loan or you can give them a loan, but also ask for stake in the company. But I don't think that's what that was doing. I think you were literally
a convertible loan.
You could do that. Yeah.
But so I'm not just giving them money.
It was like people average like 10-12% interest.
Yeah. And so over the course of 5 years, which is their like payback thing, they have to pay me 10% of interest each year. Or if they fail, then, well, since I would be a debt holder when I get repaid first.
Yeah. But that's if they have
the
liquidity and stuff.
I would think they could resell like all the brewing equipment they have. But yeah, I'm kind of an owner of a brewery.
You're a debtor.
Yeah.
That reminds me of
some loan shark.
Of a bar I've heard of where the drink prices, beer prices are based on supply and demand. So if a lot of people are drinking Bud Light that night, price goes up. But if not a lot of people are drinking McGolden, that goes down until it flips. So it's a fluid prices on their menu. I don't know where it is. I think I heard it on a podcast somewhere.
That's actually kind of a cool idea.
Yeah.
It'd be so hard because like I doubt they can set up their contract to say, well, if we sell more Bud Light, you're going to let us buy it from you at a cheaper amount.
What if like you just said, hey, I just run my tab and then you drank like the cheap one and eventually like a crowd of people came in and just ordered the cheap one. And now that's the expensive one. And you're like, oh, now my tab went from $4 a beer to like, I don't know, whatever max to 10. You're like, eh, this is not what I wanted. I wanted the cheap one. But I want the uncommon one.
It'd have to be like at the point of
sale. Point of sale.
Yeah. Cause that'd be really, this like, beer's gonna cost you $2 or 20.
It's called the Square Mile. It's in London.
Oh,
I've heard of that. Yeah, there were people talking about that when I was in Iceland. Actually, they recommended it.
I would definitely say the idea of it probably brings a lot of people in.
Yeah, like I would go if I was there.
Would you be as price conscious, or would you just want to go to be there and just buy what you like?
I think I would have to be a little price conscious because you don't want, like, I wouldn't, if there's two things that are equal, like in that case, it's probably going to be cocktails or, you know, something else that would be like pretty high, you know, it's not going to be like a insert very generic London beer here. You know, it's going to be like a very specific type of drink that probably fluctuates on their menu. If it's something comparable, I would just get the cheaper option because I don't know when the other one's going to keep going up, I guess. I would try to be conscious in that. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it would be kind of hard not to.
It's an interesting way to manage your inventory.
I would say it would come down to brand loyalty. Because if you're like, I will only drink McGolden
initially,
you are going to pay whatever it is offered there. But if you're like, I'm fine with drinking any light beer there is. So, oh, McGolden at this current time is $20, but a Bud Light's $2. You're going to go $2. So I would say it's kind of the brand loyalty.
And you get the experience when you actually play by the rules.
Yeah.
Too.
Cool. I'll have to go there.
That'd be interesting to watch in a college town.
Do our next podcast there.
McGolden would be sky high in Mankato.
Bush Light.
There would be so many drunk kids that just wouldn't realize that they're now paying $20 a beer.
When the bartender already has your card on.
Yeah.
As a tab open.
I bet that's how people I wouldn't want to say duped, but kind of get screwed, is they just put a tab open and then the waitress or waiter comes by and says, oh, do you want another one? You say, sure. Not even
realizing. Do one for the table. Yeah. Why not?
Like, not even realizing that the price is now more expensive.
Yeah.
Are you still looking at crypto?
I'm trying to. CoinDesk has a good 5-point breakdown. CoinDesk. Yeah. That makes a good currency.
Crypto,
I think you can.
Crypto talking points.
Yeah, crypto talking points.
Impress my friends.
Well, not. This is just any currency in general. Yeah. So I think this is pretty. In my 3 minutes of research, this is what I got. The characteristics of a good currency are fungibility. One unit of a currency is identical to another unit. Like, for instance, a Bitcoin is a better standardized currency than cows are. Two, durability. It's not physically perishable and can be used in the future. Like, euros are a better currency than flowers, which are perishable. Portability. It's easy to move around, even in large quantities. Ugh. All right, Caleb, you're going to have to help me with this term. A CBDC. You know what that is?
Is that a different?
I've heard of it. CBD. I don't know what it is, though.
Is a better currency than cumbersome gold bars. Four, recognizability. People recognize and accept it, and less effort is required to deceive it, decide its value. U.S. dollars are more easily traded than francs. Five, stability. Its value does not change significantly compared to the goods and services for which it's being exchanged. USDT is more stable currency than BTC, Bitcoin. So those are kind of the five things, and I think that kind of makes sense as to tying back to my limited knowledge as to what Caleb was talking about. But if you try to break down its utility, you know, what is trying to undermine its value, or like its utilities, what can it be used for encryption purposes or whatever. But ultimately, what is deciding its value is supply and demand. What's driving that supply and demand is kind of these five items. It's identical to one another, to itself, or in this case, a quantity. Like, there's only 21 million bitcoins or whatever. In other currencies, there's infinite or one. I don't know how durable it is. It's portability. So in bitcoins, probably the most valuable because more places are recognizing it. So it's a lot easier to buy and trade or exchange bitcoins where other cryptocurrencies or smaller ones aren't recognized. So they're hard to get traded. Recognizability again, and then stability. So this is kind of interesting. I don't know. That's what I can't read too much more into the article.
So what are your alt take on like trading cards?
I don't have much of a take, but I have like a whole box of baseball and football cards.
My view on trading cards is each person is going to assign a specific value that they hold near and dear, kind of like memorabilia. And the Yu-Gi-Oh! Trading card game is pretty sweet. That's my take.
I have some old Kirby Puckett cards, and I think I even have one of his rookie cards. But I don't know if he's the type of player that's going to continue to increase in value. Like, I think perhaps like the best time to have sold those would have been when he passed away. And like people were like reminiscing about Kirby Puckett. So I think now, like, less and less people probably know about him.
Or they gain value over time because it's going to be more and more difficult to find a Kirby Kirby
Puckett. Yeah, rookie that's card. Part of the equation.
So every day, you know, maybe a fifth of a Kirby Puckett rookie card gets destroyed. And eventually you might have one of X amount that are in circulation. And that might, supply and demand will drive its value.
So looking at eBay, a majority of them are going between the $3 and $15 range, but there is one that is priced at $1,500, but it's graded, which ultimately just you send it somewhere and someone says, oh yeah, this is the best or this is okay. Which is another thing I learned was when you send it in, you're also kind of taking a gamble of who's going to review it, because I could review it and say that's a 10, but you could review it and say it's an 8, and you just got screwed out of X amount of dollars because the person you got to grade it is more, I guess, crucial.
Dude, that was like the AP exams back in high school for some classes, like on the written portions. If you got like the wrong person to grade yours, like that could determine if you pass or fail an AP exam.
So awful for a podcast, but is that the rookie card you have?
I don't know. I haven't looked at it in a few years. I just know I have one.
Well, if you have that one, that's then the that one must that's be going, the one going okay. for 1500.
Guys, I have something interesting. So, have you guys heard of Alcor?
Al Gore?
Al Gore.
Close, by the way it sounds, but with a C. Alcor. It's a company that like you can hire to cryogenically freeze yourself like right before you die in hopes that they can preserve like some sort of being in yourself, whether that be like tangible or intangible. And the hope is that eventually someone will come out with like a revolutionary new technology to bring you back, either through like your physical being or non-physical being. And there's this guy named Hal Finney. He claims he's a cryptographer, a cypherpunk, and a Bitcoin pioneer. He got cryogenically frozen.
Yeah, that's a whole nother episode, but I don't think that's going to pan out too well for that guy.
Well, I think he had like significant disease and was like kind of in his final days. And he said, well, I got nothing better to do, so we'll try this.
So then he gets unfrozen and all of his diseases are still there.
Maybe. Or he passes them on to the rest of humanity.
I think the idea is that eventually someone's going to come up with a cure for that disease, whatever he has.
So you're kind of banking on the right person chooses to unfreeze you at the right time then.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're stored in a warehouse in who's paying?
It's a good question.
The power goes out for a minute and who's paying? We can't even afford to put people in senior care homes, but this guy can just sit in a cryogenic chamber for 300 years?
Well, I think it's people that have lots of money.
Is it like $5 a month? Much are they paying
So here's some stats. They have 191 patients.
I'll call them patients.
Alcor is the world leader in cryogenics.
Algor?
With the most advanced technology of any cryogenics organization, we're constantly innovating and improving. They have 1,353 members. Becoming an Alcor member is easy and surprisingly affordable.
Just have to die. And then.
If you're looking to sign up for cryonics, you've come to the right place. 50 years serving cryonics. Alcor. I almost said Al Gore. Was incorporated in California in 1972 by Fred and Linda Chamberlain. Fred is now cryopreserved at Alcor, and Linda still works here.
Waiting for her husband.
Just imagine if you're, like, you lived in a rich family, and your parents came back one day and said, you know how we're going to leave you all this money? Well, we just blew it all to freeze ourselves. So, peace out. And now you're broke.
Patients are kept at a consistent negative 196 degrees Celsius.
It has to be damaging to the body.
Wait, sorry, say that number again.
Negative 196 degrees Celsius. And then there's a section that says possible revival, and it's pretty short, all with the goal of your revival and reintegration into society. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, they have no clue if this even works. It could just be like some Ponzi scheme, getting people to pay for cryogenics and pay large sums of money. Who knows if people are even being kept at that temperature. Maybe they just go bury them when you're not looking. I don't know.
The company's going to go bankrupt one day, and they're just going to have a whole bunch of bodies to deal with.
Smell. Yeah, we're just renting out a warehouse outside of San Francisco, and if we don't pay rent, then sorry.
I wonder if it's like some of these alternative investments where you have to have like a certain amount of wealth in order to do it. And so, like, essentially,
they can just leverage, like, your wealth against
giving your wealth to this company, guaranteeing them a certain rate of return to be able to pay for your frozen ass.
I I think with that, we can do the water
cooler. That's a lot. Wait, that's a lot to process.
Caleb has one more thing to add.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. So Alcor headquartered in a sand-colored business park in Scottsdale, Arizona, offers two types of cryonic suspension services. Full body for $200,000 and head only for $80,000.
Surprisingly affordable.
It's a bargain for a shot at immortality. Clients typically pay by signing over their life insurance policies.
So just... So, like,
that's interesting.
Just the head's frozen, and then just a,
yeah, it's like
Futurama. Like a dead body's just dangling below it.
Like Futurama. And then eventually they'll just, you'll just feed off the tank that you're in.
Like, the first thing that popped in my head when we went down that route was Austin Powers. All right, now let's go to the water cooler wrap up.
My wrap up for this week, or tip, I don't know, my comment on this week. Planting stuff is pretty cool. Like plants are cool. Go spring and summer. Go plant something. I don't know. It's good for the earth.
I got one. I recommend index match functions more than VLOOKUP functions in Excel.
At first, I thought you were talking about retirement.
Indexing?
Yeah. Like, oh, okay.
I don't know. I can find VLOOKUPs to be helpful, but I haven't used the index function.
I am looking forward to NCAA football coming back because as of right now, I am in a dynasty mode in NCAA 2014, which low-key is probably one of the best video games of all time. But yeah, I'm ready for an updated version to come back.
If there's one game with like the most amount of replayability, it's the NCAA football games. Because it does, the players don't really matter anyway. It's not like you're playing as Michael Vick or, you know, Adrian Peterson in the prime or, you know, Lamar Jackson. You're just playing with a dude that's either good or bad at football. Yeah. And then you just recruit him after 4 years.
And it may retain some of its value, but like, before NCAA said that they're coming back, like the 14 game was selling on eBay for like $200. Jeez. Robert, you got anything?
Yeah, I just thought of one. Enjoy this Minnesota Twins season because although they're in first place, they're really not a good team. It's just the rest of the division is really, really shitty. So if you want to go to see them win, go to a game where they play the Royals or Tigers or Guardians or White Sox.
I don't know how much their tickets are, but we should go to a Saints game.
Cheap. Oh, Saints, I don't know.
Oh, shit.
I'm going to a Saints game this Sunday.
Twins tickets are probably cheaper than Saints.
Or Twins on Saturday.
I could have got a Saints tickets today, but I was like, oh, I have a podcast.
Shit.
Next time.
Yeah. The Saints cast.
All right, well, I think that wraps it up.
Yeah, I think that wraps it up.
Or we can bash what or the football team, the Jets.
Dude, the Nets are so bad. They're just so bad. They have the worst offseason ever.
Hey, I'm the truth from the truth. I could buy it, but it's just a rental. It's not a good investment. Being bad with your money is being good at flexing. They always chasing a bag, I guess they couldn't catch it. They trying to be like me, but it's not a good impression. I used to get on instrumentals just to get it out my mental. I was handing out my demos and they wouldn't check it. They told me I'd never make it, but now they get the message. That's important information, so I wouldn't text it. They want to get a reply, they want screenshots, but they won't get a response, not even three dots. These sheep talk, no lying, they throwing cheap shots. I had to cut some people off, I had to detox. I keep talking in my head, I got deep thoughts. On the steps where me and Navy did the beatbox. Been old school like Reeboks with knee socks. Corbin know I fuck them up when the beat drops. I'm coming back more level headed.
This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, please consult a professional.